I say over. Macharov wants us to be here till 10:15. There's two reasons why that's not going to happen. Number one, I'm not going to stay here till 10:15. Number two, my wife just told me I had to get home. So we want to get to it, I'm not going to be here till 10:15. So I'm going to say something I learned this morning, just a different idea that was in my head. I was thinking a lot this past week about what is somebody's goal supposed to be when they are here Shana Aleph. And we're not going to go through the whole room and everybody has to say what they are. But it's definitely an important thing to think about. Not a good shot. It's definitely an important idea to think about what really it is that you're trying to accomplish here, and to understand the bigger picture, which, you know, probably for the Cleveland Rebbe, it's a little easier to understand. But for the rest of us who aren't Rebbe's and aren't from Cleveland. From Cleveland?
Yeah.
Okay, for the rest of us that aren't from Cleveland and aren't Rebbe's, it's hard for us to understand the bigger picture. But to really get that you're building your families and you're building your future life while here, and to really try to take life more seriously. Maybe that you guys do take life more seriously, but if it's the general consensus, the fact that there's only six of you here, so we're talking to the masses, and we're representing even those that are bums and are still lying in bed or watching Netflix or doing whatever else is pathetic in life and not really accomplishing all that much. Right, Charnel told me to say that line, but to really try to put in structure what it is that. That you want to accomplish, and to make building blocks for your lives that you're going to be able to build off. I wasn't 100% sure what I wanted to say and where I was going to go this morning, but that's why before you come to work, you have to make sure you learn, because hopefully you ask Kadosh Baruch Hu to give you something, and he's able to deliver. The Gemara in the Darim, also Gemara in Ksubis, it's possible you've heard of this Gemara. I don't like to say a famous Gemara. There's two reasons why saying something famous and well-known is very stupid. Number one, well, if you don't know the Gemara, then you feel like an idiot. That's number one. And, it's not... there's a lot of you guys will do that you should feel like idiots, but, we don't have to do that to make you feel like an idiot. And number two, just because I think it's famous or well-known, it doesn't mean that it's famous or well-known to you. But in any event, Rabbi Akiva, the great Rabbi Akiva, who... he was like a Shana Aleph guy, like when he was 40. That's when he was Makarev himself, and he got into Judaism, and he married this woman, and the workout chief himself, and he did. We're talking about Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva got into Judaism. He married this woman. Her father had maybe better and stronger ambitions for who should marry her daughter, and she wasn't so happy with Rabbi Akiva, and he disowned them. He disowned them, and you can imagine if you come from money, then all of a sudden now you're dirt poor. Life can be pretty difficult. And Rabbi Akiva and his wife, they had nothing. They were basically like sleeping on straw beds. They didn't have pillows. They didn't have blankets, which is in general, like the time of Gemara, like people who were millionaires. We're basically have been like the Bill Gates of today. But those who are really poor, you can't even imagine what that would be like today. And they were living on straw. They were sleeping on straw. They get a knock on their door. I love when I get knocked on their door. I love when people come to collect money. I'm not saying that it's like a joke. It gives me a lot of simcha. My children get very excited about it. So he gets a knock on his door. And the person says, I'm basically comes out. The story is with Eliyahu Navi, this guy says someone's like, "Can you give me straw? I don't even have straw on that floor." And Rekiva says, "Ah, unbelievable! We're not even the poorest. There's even somebody poorer than us." Okay, we're gonna tell the whole story of the Gemara, and then we're gonna go back to all the ideas. Okay, fast forward. Rekiva wants to go learn Torah. His wife tells him, "Go learn for 12 years." 12 years is 12 years is a lot of time. I was still in college 12 years ago. 12 years is like a really, really long time. You just throw out a number, but it's a really long time. And you'll all hopefully be working in 12 years, even though you want to be doctors. You'll be finishing, probably a residency in 12 years. So 12 years is a very long time. Rabbi Akiva goes to learn for 12 years. It's the day he's coming back. It's like really exciting. His wife probably super excited that he's coming back. And this Russia tells his wife, your husband, Rabbi Akiva, horrible person. You know, these like people who like, you know, they just like to talk and whatever you tell them, it's not going to really accomplish anything. She's like, why is he such a horrible person? He left you for 12 years. Who does that? Who leaves their wife for 12 years? And she says, you know, I wish he would leave for another 12 years. Rabbi Akiva's like at the doorstep when he hears that. And you know, it's going to be like Shulman. He's going to like learn for 12 years and then another 12 years. You know, he's thinking right now. Like, he thinks, I don't know, he's on his phone. But like, you know, we didn't say his name. Akiva Tanti was on his phone. But he's going to go learn for like 24 years. You're going to be Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara was like basically writing like you were just going to fill in your name. So then Rabbi Akiva goes and learns for another 12 years. He doesn't even come home. Okay, we'll get to that point as well. And he comes back after 24 years. Imagine 24 years. And I'm the only one in this room who's even 24, who's older than 24. Now that I was in fourth grade 24 years ago. That's crazy, 24 years ago. And he comes back, and there's like a whole big, everyone wants to see this big rabbi coming back, 24,000 Talmidim, unbelievable. And his wife, again, the Russia comes and says, what are you doing? He's like, I'm going to see my husband in 24 years. I want to see like the greatness he's become. And she's wearing her raggedy clothing and she's trying to, and I'm not like, you know, I'm not making this story. Like, and this is exactly what the Gemara is doing. You can check it out. It's exactly what the Gemara is saying. And she goes to meet him and she's trying to get there. And everyone's like, no, you get away, you raggedy woman. We don't want you near. This is a great Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva tells, and his Talmidim like, no, stay away. And Rabbi Akiva's like, no, let her come closer. Everything you're seeing, me, all of you, it's because of this woman. It's because of the tremendous, tremendous sacrifice by this woman. The father-in-law, 24 years, you hear the big Rav is coming to town. He comes, he says, you know, I want to be master of my nether. I said I wouldn't give anything to my son-in-law. I want to be master of the nether. And he's like, oh, interesting. I have to be your son-in-law. Oh, let me be master of your nether. And Rabbi Akiva gets half the estate and the rest is history. So there's a lot of ideas we're going to discuss. We're going to go back to the first idea when the poor person knocked on the door and wanted the straw and was even poorer than Rabbi Akiva. Chaim Shmulevitz, who was a former Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir Yeshiva, he said that we never realize what we really have. We think that everybody, we always look at everybody else. And it's never like, I'm doing this, but look what that person is doing. Look what that person is doing. Like probably, you know, and hopefully, you know, you guys are very lucky to have an amazing, amazing Rav as Rav Charnoff. But very often, you know, our eyes are always somewhere else. They're always looking at what everybody else has. So let me look at, oh, I can move up to a quote unquote higher shear, a quote unquote higher this, a quote unquote higher that. But we never take in what we really have. We never appreciate, and often we need to see what other people are suffering before we're able to really fully grasp what it is that we have. There was years ago, I read this. I'm not some like avid reader, so and most of this stuff don't really catch my eyes. But I read this incredible psychology report that if you take 100 people in the room, so imagine you get 100 guys from yeshiva, you all come into like one circle, you make a bonfire, you got some hot dogs, some marshmallows, you know, whatever floats your boat, and all of you would write like your problems and put it into the circle, and then. Then Waxman would read it, and the Cleveland Rebbe would read it, and Moshe Rabbeinu would read it, and 24-year Shulman would read it. You know, we're all going to read each other's problems. And at the end of the day, they said 95% of people are going to say, I'd rather my own problems than somebody else's, because, you know, you're really messed up, and I'm only like a little bit messed up, and I don't want to deal with like whatever it is that you have going on. But we're so blinded by what everybody, by what's going on, and we only see, oh, that person has it so good, and like we never know what's going on behind the closed doors. Sometimes you need a reminder that you could have it bad. There's always somebody that has it worse, and even somebody that quote unquote has it good, it's not so good. 12 years, number two. Rabbi Akiva went to learn for 12 years. When I was a Shana'av, I think I heard that Gemara. I was a little bit inspired, and I actually said I wanted to learn for 10 years. You could ask why I didn't say 12. I don't have an answer. But I thought 10 sounds, you know, whole numbers. No, so, you know, maybe 13, like Bas Mitzvah, that wasn't doing it for me. 10 years, they wanted 10 years. I only got 8, so I still owe, maybe I have to take, maybe I have to both. I need to take 2 years off to go learn and then come back. And he has to continue paying me so I can support my family. That conversation won't go over so well. But what it really means to devote 12 years of your time for Talmud Torah. Now, we live like, you know, when I was here, when I heard that Gemara and I was Shemal, you know, we had like small little Nokias that all they could do was play like the game Snake. They couldn't really, I don't even, you guys don't even know what Snake is. So we couldn't even, we
no,
couldn't.
No, that's a good game.
Oh yeah, Snake is a good game. And Atom Smash, oh, the penis. The penis. Why are you doing Shear? Being a local penis. And, you know, you could, I could like, when I heard 12 years, like it was actually a little bit imaginable. But like nowadays, like the world we live in, like forget about going to learn for 12 years. Why don't we focus on this? We got 12 days till Hanukkah. We got like 12 days till Hanukkah. Focus on like the next 12 days. Just go into all three Siddur. Morning, afternoon, and night Siddur. Let's just focus on that. And then maybe we'll head into Hanukkah. We'll light the lift. We'll look into the Hanukkah lift on the first day of Hanukkah. And we'll be like, you know, Rabbi Akiva, me and you, like, we're one. You did 12 years, I did 12 days, but like, we're basically the same because you didn't live in the time of like, you know, phones that could do like a million things. You lived in very, very simple times. But to understand like what it really means to go 12 years, like it's truly something else. Then we get to 12 and 12. You know, I've had a few days in my career, my professional career. I'm very blessed that even when I work, even on days when I work crazy hours, it's never like fully come at the expense of my family. But I've had a few days in my career that I've not been able to see my kids for an entire day. I happen to think it's a terrible, terrible, unfortunate thing in the world when you have parents that only see their kids on Shabbos. Like that your hours are so crazy. I, Baruch Hashem, have never had that. I've never had that, you know, to deal with that. I also don't make what investment bankers make. So, you know, at least they don't have to worry like month to month, like how they're going to like pay for their home. But, you know, okay. You know, there's a trade-off with everything in life. So Rabbi Akiva comes home. He's literally by the door. He's like right outside of Mordechai's door. He hears his wife say, go learn for another 12 years. He doesn't even go into the house. He doesn't want to say, how are you? How the last 12 years been? How are the kids? How's everything? Let me give you a kiss on your shoulder. Let me say hi to you. And then go learn. Is that like such a hard thing? You know, here, like, if any guy in Leiva Torah was to take 5 minutes out of their day to like devote anything you're going to do for 5 minutes and the rest of the day you were learning, we'd have to send you out of this yeshiva because this would not be the proper place for you to be in. Rabbi Akiva couldn't take 5 minutes. He wouldn't have become Rabbi Akiva. And then I think it's Ozer Shmulevitz says on this, I think on he has a point in the Gemara in Tzubis that brings it up. He says, no, because 12 plus 12 is different than 12 and 12. 20 or 24 is different, sorry, than 12 and 12. If he stopped for 5 minutes, now it's done. Now it's done. If you guys decide, I want to go to 100 minyanim, and you go to 100 minyanim in a row, or you go to 50, miss one, and then go to 50, it's not the same. Consecutiveness, recipus, is much different than having a stop. And Rabbi Akiva fully got that he would not have become Rabbi Akiva had he gotten into the house. It's a very powerful thing to think about what it really means when I do things consecutively. When I was in YU, there was during the middle. There happens to be like the YU main base Medrash Minyan. It's just really long. It's really, really, really long. Pretty slow, etc. And sometimes just having 2:30 to 2:50 is just not something people want to do. So they had a 4 o'clock mincha that's like one floor up that would end at like 4:10. So during Kol Seder, Rav Schechter, who's not like such a, Herschel Schechter, he's not like such a, let me make my statement heard, let me have like bang on the bima type of guy. That's not really his personality. And he's usually misquoted when like he has like these big proclamations. But he basically made a whole big stink that you shouldn't go to the 4 o'clock mincha. And he said, I get it. I mean, I don't because I daven long, but I get it. 20 minutes every day versus 10 minutes, like in your like thick minds where like you think you know everything. Like, yeah, it's like really annoying. It's a waste of time to have mincha be 10 minutes longer. And I can definitely resonate with that. Like a 20 minute mincha versus like a 10 minute mincha. You guys are very lucky. Leiva Torah daven is like a lot quicker than other yeshivas, mainly because Rabboah's daven's faster. But like Rabboah's like made everything like, If Yesh Mon Ezra was like 5-10 minutes longer, yeah, probably minion attendance would be even worse, as hard as that might be to actually imagine. But you know, who would want to deal with another 5-10 minutes? So Rosh Hashanah says, he bases off this Gemara, that every day, 3 to 6:30 is Kol Seder. If you take that break at 4 o'clock to daven mincha every day, it's just not the same. Consecutiveness, and especially in the, and again, at that point, like some people had smartphones, and it was a different door than we're living in today. But understanding that, like, if you're able to conquer that, like, I'm going to focus for a few hours. I'm just going to focus. Like, it really is amazing what you could accomplish. There was one time, I think once I remember doing this in my life, I committed to watching a football game 1-4 on that channel the entire game. I really committed to that. It's one of the hardest things to do. Like, you don't even realize how impossible it is. And this could be potentially, I don't know, Rabot, this is all obsessed with football. I don't know if you guys have that same, I mean, I enjoy football too. But how hard it is to really stay on the same thing, to not turn the channel, to watch commercials, to not go back between plays, to have your mind focused. And not that I'm saying that that's what you should do. Like, you should probably go to Night Sitter, but you know, at the end of the day, if you're going to really focus on something, the value of being able to focus on something is something that it's not only that you'll be successful in yeshiva, which you inevitably will be, but you'll be successful in relationships, you'll be successful in dating, you'll be successful in marriage, you'll be successful with your children, you'll be successful at your job. Like, I'm pretty bad, I'll have meetings with both and I can't stay focused. But like, I'm still better than what I imagine like 15, 20 years from now is going to look like. And I know for like in my job and in life in general, when I focus, you're just able to be super, super successful. And the last part of the story is mattering the neder. When Rabbi Akiva's father came over and said, you know, I want to annul my neder that my son-in-law and daughter can benefit from us. And Rabbi Akiva ultimately ended up doing it. And it's just ultimate irony how the person that I didn't want to have any benefit from me, oh, now he's such a big shot and whatever, now I want to go back on it. And a lot of times in life, we just see things half full. And I was listening, I don't know if any of you are from the 5,000, I know Ben Brockman. I was just listening to a podcast on my way to yeshiva with Ben Brockman. He's a very well-known, again, we don't say famous, because then if you don't know him, I don't want you to feel like idiots, but he's a very well-known criminal defense lawyer in the 5 towns. He had Puff Daddy, Plaxico Burress, other big clientele in his life, and I really didn't know anything about him except for the fact that he was a big defense attorney, and he was saying he doesn't like confrontation, he doesn't like Lashon Hara. That in of itself was worth listening to the podcast, because those are things that we should try to avoid. But he was at a dinner, this person came up to him and said, can I talk to you? And he's like, I don't really want to. And he basically, the person said, like, how do you live with yourself that you defend criminals? And he's like, okay, thank you very much, I'm gonna leave. And his wife's like, you were a little harsh to that guy. Like, what's the point of arguing? Whatever I say, and this is an amazing, amazing mussar for life, whenever you get in arguments, so like, you know, it's just going nowhere in life. Like, whatever I say to that person is not going to accomplish anything. They're not going to change their opinion. They're not going to be like, oh, you know, you're such a tzaddik, you defend criminals, that you're such a great person. Like, he's not changing their mind. Like, I don't have to have that conversation. Okay. Fast forward 2 years, he gets a call at 2 a.m. He says, you know, when I get a call at 2 a.m, it's not someone saying, oh, by the way, I had a baby. Like, it's never a good thing. We never want to get a call at 2 a.m. And the person says, hi, it's so-and-so. You might not remember me. I 2 years ago, I met with you, and I said, like, you're like the scum of the world that defends criminal lawyers. And he's like, yeah, I remember you. He's like, well, I'm in a real jam here. My son, who's on his way to becoming a big doctor, just got pulled over in upstate New York for having some weed and heroin. Like, I need you to get him out of this. And he said, he's like, oh, I really want to say, you know, I had such an epiphany after our conversation, I decided to stop defending criminals. He's like, but he didn't say that. He's like, okay, get me the information, we'll take care of it. And he had one of his guys who went to pick up, posted bail. And long story short, they had no right to search his car. He got him out, and now this guy is a pretty big doctor. He gets like traveled like around the world, brought in around the world to be able to uh, to be able to save a lot of people. And there's like a lot of irony from that story as well, that, you know, we have, in general in life, is really, what have you done for me lately? So when I don't need you, it's very easy for me to judge, it's very easy for me to be critical. But once you get me out of that jam, I'm able to see the other side. So the same with Rabbi Akiva and his father-in-law. The irony of, like, basically, you know, it's also, if you think about the whole story of Rabbi Akiva, maybe none of that happens if he has money. Life could be very, very different. He might not have the appreciation for, oh, we're not the poorest in the world. And it might be, okay, I have so much money, I have to go learn for 24 years. Like, you know, sometimes, the more, I remember when we bought our apartment a year and a half ago, so Rav Eliyahu is my local plumber, my local handyman, and, he was coming like every day to fix something, and he was basically saying, "The more you have, the more worries you have." It's a chazal. Yeah, it's really true. So maybe your Akiva doesn't become that. Like who knows? Who knows what would have been? But there's a lot we can take out from that story. From number one, appreciating what we have and realizing that people have it a lot worse than us. What it means to really devote time to learning, or devoting time to just anything. Focusing on anything, what it means to do consecutively, and 24 is different than 12 and 12. If I ask you what 12 plus 12 is, it could equal 24, but 24 straight is different. Than 12 and 12, and coming back to appreciating what people are like when we really need them, but not always. You know, we don't know the full story, and really to take. I really like that point also from the Ben Brockman story of. Just don't have pointless arguments. They're just not going to take you anywhere in life. And you could generally, like 10 seconds into a conversation with someone, know if it's going nowhere, knowing if the person's confrontational. When you go to secular college, you should defend what it is to be a Jew, and you should have a lot of integrity for that. But you should also know, like, when you have these crazy, crazy flaming liberals in the world who, no matter what, like, you know, it could be that a Palestinian, like, basically threw a bomb at Israel, and it ricocheted back onto a Palestinian, and they got injured, and the Jews are to blame, and they're the biggest Rishayim in the world. Like, when people see life like that, you're not going anywhere having that conversation. And, you know, the same way Hashem created mosquitoes because they're here for some purpose in the world, I'm sure liberals are here for some purpose in the world also. We just don't really know. We just don't really know what it is. Hashem's not a flaming liberal. He's like an accepted liberal. He's my kind of liberal. But all right, we'll conclude with that.